This is the one-hour version of Economic Pulse, and I'm Cameron Afshar, your host tonight. Tonight, I will be releasing the results of our April survey of Lehigh Valley businesses. The Cameron Afshar Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce survey of Lehigh Valley businesses is done on a quarterly basis, and we collect around 1,000 observations per year. The Employment and Purchasing Index for the Lehigh Valley highlights the results of these surveys. In April, we conducted our 58th survey of these series. The following is a summary of our finding. Business sentiment, as measured by the overall index, stood at 59.0, seasonally adjusted, in April 2014, a statistical tie with January results and an increase of 2.4% over last April's level. It should be noted that any index above 50 means more than half of the participants were positive about the economy. Participants' expectations of the future showed a slight decline, while their assessment of the past recorded an equally slight increase in April. However, neither change was statistically significant. The moving average of expectations of the future has shown some decline of late, while assessment of the past has remained relatively constant. The largest gain in April was in the index of planned hiring for the next 6 months. This index was up 4.5% against January 2014. The index of planned hiring for the next 6 months rose to 64.3 in April. For the second time in the last 6 months, this index has reached this level, highest since October of 2007. This is also well inside Valley's expansion range. Historically, when this index has topped this range, the Valley has experienced a rapid employment growth in the following 6 months. And we are so very close to that threshold. The average business participating in the survey is planning to hire one new employee in the next 6 months, an increase over 7/10 of an employee that they were planning to hire last October. The more reliable index for forecasting employment over the next 6 months is the moving average of this index, which is slightly below one new employee. And this is a very good and strong indicator for future employment. The percentage of the companies which are planning to increase their employment in the next 6 months was 28%. Compared to 6% who were planning to reduce employment at their site. The percentage of companies with plans for net increase in employment in April was 22, which is also a very strong indicator for the future. The index of actual hiring during the last 6 months also rose in April, leveling at 57.8, while only 2% above its January level, it stands a whopping 7% over last April's level. This is the highest post-recession level for this index. The average business participating in the survey hired 9/10 of a new employee over the last 6 months. The percentage of companies which increased their employment has been exceeding those who reduced it since April of 2010. And in general, the percent of those increasing has risen more than those decreasing since the end of the recession. Conversely, the percent of those decreasing employment has gone down more than up during the same period. In April, 29% of the participants in our survey increased their employment, while 11% reduced. The percentage of companies with net gain in employment in April was 18%. The index of actual purchases in the last 6 months represents where the rubber meets the road. An average company participating in our April survey reported 1.8% increase in their expenditures in the last 6 months, a significant increase over January's only 0.2%. The index of actual purchases in the last 6 months stood at 59.1 in April, a slight increase over January and a 3% increase over last April's level. The surprise in the survey was the index of plans for future expenditures, which dropped sharply to 54.7 in April, with an equal drop in January. This index has dropped 14% since last October. Considering all the other variables, this is odd, particularly since the average participant in the survey upped their plans for expenditures by 3.5% in April compared to 1.1% in January, even when this index was at its post-recessionary high last October. The average participant was planning to increase their expenditures only by 1.7%. In April, they are planning to increase their expenditures by 3.5%, close to double that. The issue appears to be of diffusion. While the overall index shows very slow increase in the percentage of companies who are planning to expand in the next 6 months, those who are expanding are doing it at an increasing rate. Those businesses in the valley who are expanding are raising their rate of expansion, while others are very slowly joining the fast lane. Based on data over the last 12 months, we expect the rate of growth of the economy in the valley to increase. However, this is clearly not across the board, and the distance between the leaders and the followers is widening, and is expected to widen even further during 2014. This is Cameron Afshar with Economic Pulse from WDIY. I'd like to introduce my guests tonight. We start with Jennifer Mann. Everybody in the valley knows her, but for those who don't, she's president of Mann Consulting. And next to her is Kevin Fleming, president of Integrity Personnel. And next to him sits Josh Dodd, who is a senior VP at Univest in the Lehigh Valley. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome.
Thanks, Cameron. Thanks.
Tonight we are discussing the release of the Lehigh Valley survey of Lehigh Valley businesses and all the findings that we had. Anything interesting to you guys?
Well, I'll start, Cam. And you know, this really compares to some of the findings with the Philadelphia Fed's Business Outlook report and the Beige Book in April. And something I saw that was very common is there seems to be a theme that the growth we're measuring right now is described as moderate or slight, and also that about 50% or so, 50% of the firms surveyed, and I think the same is true in your report right now, are giving us a projection of growth for the next 6 months, which is definitely better than what we had seen in the last, what I'd say, 14 to 18 month cycle. Does that sound accurate?
Yes, very much so. Yeah, we have observed, of course, a much more robust declaration from those industries or those companies who are planning to expand, and a lot of companies who are sitting on the sideline and are watching. Jennifer, what have you seen?
Well, it's interesting because I think the weather of this winter played a big factor psychologically. People were sort of, it was a little bit depressing, but I also think the real effect was people were staying in their homes. They weren't out spending money, particularly the smaller retailers felt that pinch. I know there are some that didn't survive this weather. Restaurants felt that pinch, and of course all of those companies that supply those restaurants and businesses. And I think as sort of spring has finally arrived, a little bit late, but better late than never. But I think now as we see that, I think it's also psychologically impacting the economy, where people are so ready and so willing to go, let's get things moving. I think that has to bleed over a little bit into the enthusiasm you see in some of what your survey results are. The people are feeling a bit more optimistic, mm-hmm. and they're anxious. They were a little more idle this winter than I think they would have liked to be.
True. Josh, what about you?
Well, to Jennifer's point there, I think there's also a lot of lost productivity at businesses as companies were paying people to stay home, paying extra money to have their premises cleaned and available for business when they could return. I would make an analogy to the overall economy of the fact that we've actually been into a recession for about the last 5.5 years, beginning in late 2008. And I think just as people are poised for spring, I think people are poised to come out of this recession and to have some growth for the first time.
Oh, yes, and the particularly to Jennifer's point about restaurants suffering significantly, we have observed that demand for durable goods is not as much affected. I mean, if you were planning to buy a washer and was snow on the ground, you couldn't go. It doesn't mean you wouldn't buy it. You just buy it another day. But you were planning to have a Sunday brunch and it's snowing. Monday wouldn't do. So a lot of that demand disappeared, and that was also presented with the economic growth for the first quarter, which was anemic, 0.1%. It's similar to the time that we were in recession. But every economist has reviewed that, has expressed that this is an exception, and because of the fact that all these businesses couldn't produce anything, they were in the dumper. As a matter of fact, I was looking at the forecasts. One of the most optimistic ones is the Deutsche Bank economist, who is forecasting 4.2% growth in the second quarter. The highest average consensus is about 3%. But his forecast shows a lot of pent-up demand from the first quarter overlapping and coming in. Which we are yet to see, of course.
Well, you can't see faces on the radio, I know that, but my face registers a little bit of a little bit of skepticism on that number. I don't think we have enough bounce in the economy to make a jump like that. So it certainly is anomalous to say 4% or plus 4% in one quarter.
Yeah, right? His was 4.2%. The highest of all the economists, group of about 30 economists that I follow.
Maybe he was skiing during the bad weather. The ski resorts did do well during the winter. They were the ones that reported the best results, I think, in durable goods sales.
I think the sector that may have to do something more in this quarter coming up is actually construction. People are really expecting miracles to get back on construction schedules. I see this from housing to commercial construction, and that's perhaps in those specific sectors where I think you're going to have some a lot of overtime this spring and a lot of mobilization.
Well, I think anybody, any type of project, anyone in the construction industry, that where your ability to move forward is dependent on good weather. If you have a lot of work and you can't get to it all, that poses a problem of its own as well. So I think there are a lot of bigger projects that are behind schedule, which will keep those contractors from getting to what's next and being able to get as much in the air. So, I mean, that from an employment standpoint should be an up. Be an up arrow because there really is a lot of demand, and we're seeing a lot more in commercial construction as well as housing. I mean, it's been a while since you've seen some housing developments being built, and you drive through the valley now, and you certainly see that.
Oh, yes. The construction industry was the largest loser percentage-wise during the Great Recession. Close to 40% of all employees of this sector disappeared during the the jobs disappeared during this period. And even though we are pulling out of recession, we have not yet seen that uptick that would give the impression that we may go up to maybe not 100% of what it used to be, but even 80% of what it used to be. And there is still in the data no indication of that, but data again is always looking in the rear view mirror, and it reflects what was in the past, and it is still collecting data about what happened in March. So we are not yet getting to the spring.
Cameron, do you have any indication of where these employees may be?
Well, there's no question that some of them are unemployed and run out of probably their extended unemployment and looking for other jobs. Also, the fact that the percented labor force is sort of shrinking, which is very, very unusual at this point in the recovery. That has to be an expanding group, but it is shrinking, is still indication that a lot of people have totally given up. Even the hope of getting a job. So if the recovery is to happen for real, this spring should show a significant growth.
I asked because I was wondering what that would do to prices for new construction. During the last few years, prices have maintained a pretty low and or grown at a very low pace. And as you see more, I wonder, you know, what that will mean for prices later on this year as contractors are busy and their schedules fill. Are these people prepared to come back to work and mobilize?
Based on historical data, that is the most probable outcome, is that they will come back. But our historical data doesn't go back to the Great Depression, when something similar to what we experienced happened. It is all post-1950s that we have data to that level of detail. And yes, people usually would be waiting for the jobs to come back. And as a result, initially you don't see much of an increase in wages. But as time goes by, then you start to see it when it gets somewhere close to where the previous level was.
Do we have time to talk about wages a little bit?
Sure.
Okay, to pick up on what you said, you know, I think this all stems from the demand curve. And what we see across all the industries we serve is the demand curve is still depressed. So that demand curve is keeping prices down. One of the forces keeping prices down. So as it relates to wages, we haven't seen movement in wages since the recession began, and we don't expect to see wages increase much at all this year. And I think most of the consensus estimates are wages won't start moving until 2015.
Well, that is interesting to learn. Mm-hmm. It's we have seen that the data does not support any increase, but I was wondering that which direction it is coming. Obviously, we have oversupply, and you are referring to the demand not catching up. So that's probably where we're going to be.
Yeah, I think the exception, Cameron, would be in speculation. So if there's some speculative bubbles that occur, and there could be speculation in construction, certainly if there is a pent-up demand and all of a sudden we see increases, that would definitely affect labor rates at some point. But I can't believe that it would have much traction for a long period of time.
Sure. This is a very interesting discussion as we are looking at what's going to happen to the Valley in the next 6 to 9 months. And all this data also shows that separation between the companies who are planning to expand and the rest of the group, that they are basically sitting on the sideline and waiting to, or keeping their powder dry, so to speak, not jumping in. Necessarily. We are getting close to the end of this segment, but the next segment I would like to ask you, Josh, about the demand from businesses and in which sectors you see more demand coming up. We are at the end of this section. This is Cameron Afshar with Economic Pulse.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit WDIY.org.
Celtic Fair. A celebration of Celtic music and culture, from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Galicia, and Brittany, to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Bringing you music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 on WDIY Allentown listener-supported community public radio.
This is Cameron Afshar with a one-hour version of Economic Pulse from WDIY. My guests are Jennifer Mann, Kevin Fleming, and Josh Dodd. And in the last segment, we ended with asking Josh about the demand and which sectors, which businesses are the ones who want to borrow money.
Well, thanks, Cameron. My role at Univest is to lend to small and medium-sized enterprises, so privately held firms in the Lehigh Valley. And what I've seen is a lot of activity in the last 18 months on refinancing owner-occupied space, and mostly commercial and industrial sites. Rates are very favorable, and we saw a lot of that activity. Towards the end of last year, we saw the expiration of the bonus depreciation, where companies were adding a lot of equipment, and there was a lot of activity. And actually, with so many orders, that the inventory at the equipment distributors, they didn't have enough. Everybody has lower inventory these days as a result of the coming out of the recession. And that was very busy up until the end of last year. What I haven't been seeing in my manufacturing clients is after they put those pieces of new pieces to work, I haven't seen much in terms of expansion. I've seen companies doing more with less through this period, and it seems to be the new norm for me. Whereas they might add a shift back that they previously took away, but in buildings, maybe flex space that were built to have additions put on them when they were originally deconstructed, I haven't seen many people requesting of us to take down the wall and build the next phase. And I haven't seen too much of that in the Lehigh Valley. So really doing more with less, some automation with the equipment that I've seen installed, or just replacement of equipment that was, you know, overdue to be replaced over time.
Well, and I think that speaks to why this recession has, even though technically by data, this recession is over, I think many people still feel as if we're not completely out of it. And employment hasn't rebounded as it traditionally has following a recession, and that's just to what Josh is speaking to. A lot of those folks who lost their jobs as a result of this recession, those were not layoffs. They were job terminations with the intent of never bringing them back. Now, there are certainly circumstances where shifts have come back on or folks mm-hmm. have been brought back. But generally speaking, companies are finding ways to work with smaller overhead, and the biggest factor in overhead is employee costs. So that's, or maybe they're calling Kevin and saying, help us reduce our employee costs. But the reality is that's the slow thing. It's taken a long time for any type of recovery we've experienced to really trickle out, because it hasn't been a rapid rehiring. So a lot of people just are still waiting for the benefit of this recovery. They hear about it. They see what's happening on Wall Street. And they think, why am I not a part of this recovery? I don't feel as I'm participating or benefiting from it. And there's a lot of frustration, I think, among a lot of people yet because of that reality.
I think companies gained efficiencies through the recession, and they're doing more with less. And I know I had a side conversation with Kevin before coming into the studio today. And I was asking him, because I'm seeing some of the shifts where the companies have automated, and it's now a lower skilled type of worker that they're looking for. So they're just not calling people back, or they're doing more with temporary employees because they're not really sure what the demand is for their product. So they're not sure about calling back a full-time person. Now on the professional services side, I've even had companies that are doing the you know, part-time CFO, or they've mm-hmm. taken an executive out of the payroll, and they're supplementing that maybe with a controller, bookkeeper, and then some oversight, you know, maybe one day a week. And a lot of CFOs have kind of transitioned to work for multiple companies different days of the week, and imagine you're seeing some of that too, Kevin.
Yeah, actually, it's very interesting and a good segue, Josh, because we keep talking about this, Cameron, and you and I keep talking about this demand curve, because that's really what we at Integrity use to gauge what's going to happen in the future. And Jen, to your point, temporary staffing, and I'll take a side note for a minute, temporary staffing is just as dependent on labor demand as a normal hiring environment is. The only difference is temporary staffing can be a leading indicator on either the upswing or the downturn in hiring, because the way that it's used. But generally, if companies aren't hiring or adding regular employees, they're also not hiring or adding temporary or contract workers, because the demand curve is driving that particular need. So as a result, you know, we certainly see this very up close and personal with respect to what the companies are doing and what they're spending their money on. I'll make a point about this, that it's not just demand for product. It's not just demand for labor. It's also demand for intellectual property and demand for innovation. Once a particular manufacturing customer of Josh's buys the new piece of equipment, that new piece of equipment has a lifespan of 5 to 10 years. And I'm not counting depreciation schedules, although that influences it. The reality is many of our customers have gotten a lot more life out of their IT systems during the recession than they ever expected to. And it's amazing how long a server will last when you say, you know what, we just don't have the money to replace it. We'll live with what we have to live with. One potential positive note in the pipeline of technology spending is Microsoft is no longer going to support Windows XP. And as a result, everyone's having to upgrade who still has older infrastructure in their office. We just did it. I just had to replace every single PC in the office because of it. And I certainly would not have spent the money I just spent because all the PCs were working fine. So you're going to have these blips of demand, but I'm going to reemphasize the point that all of this activity that's going on right now is a bit sporadic. We're not feeling a very strong force in the demand curve. We're not hearing from our customers that sales are up on a consistent basis. We're certainly not hearing from customers that they're spending on expansion. To your point, they're not knocking down walls and they're not going and buying new buildings yet. So I still feel like we're in limbo.
Yeah, historically, after every recession, we see a change in mode of production. Mm-hmm. Some jobs totally disappear and new jobs take their place. We have gone through the first phase of this. Some jobs have disappeared. We are waiting to see in which direction the new jobs will be created and where we are going. Clearly, the overall economy is expanding and everybody expects it to continue to expand. So production is up with fewer people working at it. Part of it is because of automation, because of, the new mode of production as we are going into this phase. It is just that how long would it take for this to become a open plate for everybody to participate rather than just a few who are at the avant-garde of these industries and expanding? And this is where the rate of growth will have a significant effect because it affects the demand for overall labor. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who were in one industry and had lost their job have moved to other industries just to make ends meet. We have a huge number of people nationwide who have taken part-time jobs out of necessity, not that because they want it, because their full-time job disappeared and are looking to go back to their full-time job. And these are numbers that the Department of Labor doesn't count because they're not unemployed, they're not looking for a job because they have a job, so they are not counted as such.
Yeah, you know, to your point, we are also challenged with using traditional benchmarks now to try to measure the labor market. So the traditional unemployment rate that we all depend on because it's a trend line, is becoming much more difficult to use as a reflection of reality, right? Because of what Cameron just mentioned, and also we have a demographic problem. So we have a labor force that is shrinking, meaning a participatory labor force. I think the term now, Cameron, among economists is slack. Is that that's becoming popularized again?
It is starting to catch, but yeah. It is just a notion that the old definition we use for unemployment is a 1930s concept, and it is based on asking people, have you worked one day during the last week? They won't even ask you if you were paid for it. In many cases, if you work on a farm or many other exemptions, you'll be still counted as employed if you worked one day last week.
Right.
They made that definition because at the time they wanted to make things look better than the way they were. But we are stuck with that. Now, since 1990s, the BLS has been coming up with new versions, which they published. So we have data going back, but they are not yet picked up by a large majority of people because we are looking at now 6.3%, and we are looking for that to go down to 6%. But that's not real.
Right, and all we do is we try to look at the trend line and say, is it going up or is it going down? But we're getting far away from the number now as being meaningful, because 6.3, we don't know what that means. We don't know if 5% is normal employment like it was before the recession, or if it's something entirely different. And it does make – I can understand how frustrating – folks who aren't necessarily up to speed on economics or statistics, for that matter, how frustrating it can be to read these numbers and say, well, wait a minute, unemployment's going down, but I'm still working, you know, 2.5 jobs, one in the grocery store, one at the car wash, and, you know, I'm cleaning houses on the weekend.
Yeah, I think the change last week, the jobless numbers were announced and surprised the market, the 6.3 rate, I believe I'm correct on, right. And the prior month was 6.7. Well, originally when we went into this, the Federal Reserve said, you know, once unemployment got to 6.5%, you know, that is going to be a signal for us to change something with our monetary policy. Right. And while that was a significant surprise from month to month, it doesn't feel like unemployment is as good as the numbers suggest. Right. And I would say some of my clients are now interviewing people on the manufacturing side, which have been out of work for an extended period of time. And, you know, if you're at that 99 weeks, it's somewhat of a stigma, you know, if you're coming in to interview now for a position. You know, where have you been for so long in terms of, you know, in our process of job search, and they're seeing these names for the first time. It's also a lot of administrative work for them to see so many applications because of that expiration of benefit. And I think on the skill set has somewhat changed too. In the last, you know, 20 years, we've made this transition more towards a service-based economy. More high school students have been going on to college. You've seen, you know, just about every college has expanded in the last 15 years. Now, you know, it's not in vogue to go become an employee at a manufacturing site. And so I kind of applaud the work that Jack Funder and his nonprofit at the Manufacturers Resource Center has been doing to, you know, try to make high school students excited about manufacturing prospects. And they've done quite a bit in the last year to hopefully do something about that.
One thing I'll add on the as far as unemployment number is just sort of agreeing and echoing what Kevin is saying. The number really doesn't mean much. And to Josh's point, you know, we're not popping champagne corks over 6.5, hitting that benchmark, getting beneath the 6.5% unemployment rate. Why? Because it really doesn't mean what it used to mean. And the interesting thing is as the unemployment benefits expire for those who've been out of work the longest period of time, how will that affect unemployment rate as they come back into the market? And will that hurt that number? Will that adversely affect that number? It'd be interesting to see in the next couple of months.
And everybody is looking at the Wall Street numbers and wondering how is it that Wall Street is going up so rapidly while the rest of the economy is so slow. And we totally forget that up to about a few months ago, the Federal Reserve was pumping in equivalent of $1 trillion into the Wall Street per year, directly to one market. And everybody says, why is this going up? Of course, all this money is pouring in that. In any business, if that kind of money was entered, they would have expanded multiple folds as well. The question, of course, comes in that as the tapering is going on, that process will look somewhat questionable. And Kevin, you sit on the advisory board of the Philadelphia Federal Reserve. What's the talk over there?
Well, I don't want to shake anyone up, but I will say that there is as many questions amongst the policymakers as there are amongst those of us in business. One of the reasons that they have advisory councils like ours with the Philadelphia Fed is to be able to inject at least what they try to inject is some real-world commentary and evidence into their monetary analysis to figure out policy. So to that point, and Cameron, you made a great point about the markets right now. I mean, I was telling Josh earlier, I said, here's what's crazy about equity markets. You know, you're seeing 30, 70, even 100 PE ratios that are completely unrealistic. I mean, Facebook is a great example, not to pound on anything, but it's a good case study of a lot of money flowing through the equity markets right now. So what I think most of us are looking at is an imbalance. Now, that's not by itself unusual. You're going to have an imbalance after any kind of major shock to the economy. But the imbalance right now is causing some very challenging scenarios for policymaking. And I think Chair Yellen of the Fed had really given an indication of this about a week and a half ago, I believe, in her speech, where she is trying to convey that we're not using any hard benchmark to make policy changes. We're trying to be able to read as much as we can before making those changes. Having said that, and I guess this is the point where I have to give the caveat, I do not speak for the Federal Reserve, and all of my opinions are my own. And everyone who talks from the Economic Advisory Council needs to say that, so forgive me for injecting that.
No, not at all.
But the point is that when it comes to the policy making, we're in a bit of a quandary right now. All of that money flowing into the system, to your point, has an impact, and taking the money out of the system has an impact. We're there. We can't change that. If they were to stop immediately and start backing out instead of trying to taper, it would certainly have a shock to the markets. But guess what? The tapering is going to have a shock to the markets as well. Having said that, I pose this question to you, Cameron. Oh. Money has never been cheaper. In my professional career, and I'm sure going way back before then, money in this country has never been cheaper. So why aren't we spending it other than in M&A activity? I mean, that's really where you're seeing the money change hands. But there is a fundamental issue with this.
Yes, that is a major issue, particularly in these days, because interest rates right now are even lower than they were in late 1940s, where we were coming out of the Great Depression. And still, you don't, Josh, see people breaking down your doors demanding money.
Sure. I think I could answer Kevin's question in one word, which is uncertainty. And I don't think that's a surprise to anyone. Uncertainty about demand for their product, uncertainty about, you know, regulatory changes in their industries. My recollection from Chairwoman Yellen's comments is that she was kind of backtracking from her initial statements as chairwoman the prior month, where she did left the door open to some indication that rates could increase sooner than before, you know, was thought. And the market didn't respond very well to that. So I sort of saw that tapering comment as backtracking by not tying anything to one clear numerical benchmark.
And I think you're right. And that was part of the motivation, was to respond to that overreaction from the market. And here's the concern. Again, you can't be rational in thinking about interest rates right now, because the market should be rational and say, yes, we'd like to see interest rates begin to increase, because that will in turn help us with pricing. It'll in turn help us with inflation. And inflation is not the ogre that everyone thinks it is. We need some level of healthy inflation. However, the market doesn't respond rationally.
That's true.
So the Fed has to thread the needle.
I have a question of Josh.
Jennifer, why don't you kindly keep the question for the next section, as we are getting to the end of this session and I'm being signaled to. This is Cameron Afshar with Economic Pulse from WDIY.
You're listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station. If you appreciate and value the programming we provide, including NPR's in-depth news coverage, our local public affairs programs, and the diverse mix of music we broadcast each day, please consider becoming a member. Membership is our most important source of revenue. We can't do it without you. You can make a secure donation online at wdiy.org. That's wdiy.org. And thanks for your support.
This is Cameron Afshar with Economic Pulse from WDIY. And this evening with me are Jennifer Mann, Kevin Fleming, and Josh Dodd. And Jennifer, sorry, last time I had to ask you to hold your question until this segment.
Well,
go ahead.
I think everybody's in suspense now.
Yes.
Josh, I was wondering to what extent you felt perhaps a lack of demand for borrowing had to do with increased regulation and documentation on behalf of borrowers. I think anybody who's gone through a process of something as simple as buying a home or refinancing their personal mortgage or home mortgage has seen a big change in how that happens. A lot more documents required. The process is slower, and it's even more difficult for the business owner and business people. So I just was curious as to your thoughts and on that, the regulatory influence.
Sure. Jennifer, I can appreciate that. And I would say where I see it the most prevalent is the employees that are now at under 50, but in the 40s that are looking to expand. As you know, for small businesses, the threshold for the Affordable Care Act is 50 employees. And in those circumstances, I see a lot of apprehension in our borrowers where if they need to bring on additional staff, they're concerned about what the cost structure could look like and the increased scrutiny. I do see it in other regards for higher regulatory compliance costs in certain industries as well. But that's the number one that I was thinking of.
Well, Jennifer, on that thought, what about the impact of government on all the events that is happening?
Well, I know we've talked a bit about monetary policy, but we also know that governments have drastically reduced their budgets at every level. Federal spending, state spending, which trickles down to our local municipalities. And in Pennsylvania, where we have nearly 2,700 municipalities, so that's a lot of impact. And I think what we have seen through the recession and really since 2008 and maybe even 2007 is reduced spending on government on big projects, capital projects, infrastructure projects. And I think that's even carried over into larger institutions where those projects might require a lot of capital budget raising. And if you look around the Lehigh Valley, and I was part of a group that worked to bring dollars to these projects. If we look, a lot of projects on college campuses, on hospitals and such had a big component of state dollars in them or federal dollars in them. When those dollars went away, at least temporarily, those projects didn't happen.
Right.
And so that, of course, is a huge trickle effect, particularly as we've mentioned before, earlier in the program, to the construction industry, and of course that the tentacles of the construction industry are numerous. And in addition to air organizations and institutions, of course, we now have seen action from Harrisburg last fall as it relates to transportation and that infrastructure, something that had been ignored, quite frankly, for several years here in Pennsylvania, and something that was the proverbial kick the can down the road, let somebody else deal with it. And the one thing I will say, having served in the legislature while this issue was debated but not addressed, we missed a huge opportunity. If we had acted in a way the legislature did this past fall, we would have been able to get so much more done for the same amount of money. Material costs were less. Labor costs were less. Bids were coming in under budget for the projects that were being done. So I think we really missed an opportunity for fear of legislators making difficult decisions, which have an impact on residents, right? Because we all know gas tax has gone up, the cost of a vehicle registration, your driver's license, those things have gone up. But I would argue that it's nominal when you look at the need. And when the need goes unmet, the problem does not go away. I don't care what the problem is. It tends to get worse, and it tends to get more expensive. And that's what we've seen from an infrastructure standpoint. And I think that's what any organization or institution has seen in their capital needs. Now that they've gone unaddressed, the need is greater, and the projects are more expensive.
The infrastructure spending has been very helpful, I think, especially with construction. The number of bridges that have been announced in the Lehigh Valley or just outside will certainly continue to help that. Now, some of the contractors and some of the regulations associated with the stormwater management has I think, halted some residential construction. The regulations say that what's considered deemed impervious and how much of a developed area can actually be covered with blacktop and rooftops, and that has sort of hurt the development price of residential tract development. You know, some tracts that could have been used for in different ways, whereas now to do the same project or something similar, they would have to put extra runoff and seepage pits, which obviously increases the land cost to the developer.
And the drop in construction and particularly roads and bridges at this time is devastating, considering that at the beginning of the recession, we didn't go full bore on those types of projects which have the highest level of multiplier and highest spread effect on the economy. We would have been out of the recession a year sooner, if not more, if originally, instead of going all different ways, we have concentrated our funds to emphasize on roads and bridges. And many of the expenditures that has happened are all variety of different ways, which we don't know if they will be fruitful or not. But we have all these bridges who are actually falling down. We have to take care of them, and roads that need repair, and we have to do it. So it is sad that that didn't happen. I'm glad that at least it is starting to come about.
I think one of the interesting things on, especially here in Pennsylvania, is that there is a recognition also that hybrid financing is something to be embraced for infrastructure projects. So I know now that there's really been a push, and again, probably only in the last 8 months, for what they call P3 financing for bridge construction, which allows for private investors to fund an entire bridge project. Of course, PennDOT still has to approve it, and it still has to go through its normal regulatory approvals. But instead of waiting for the money to be paid out in a bond issue or something else, private entity can do the funding from the get-go and then turn the bridge over to whatever the municipality is. The idea behind it is the private company says we can do it better, faster, cheaper than it would take in a traditional way, and therefore we'll make money on our spread, back to the fact that we have all this money in the system. And that's one very big microcosm. I agree with you, Cameron, 100%. And hindsight's 20/20. But, you know, the reality is, and this was should have been a federal issue, a federally pushed issue from the beginning on infrastructure. If we as a federal government had spent three times what they spent on that initial TARP, right? It was TARP, I guess, and focused it on real construction projects, on real bridges,
roads.
Oh,
you mean
roads,
the stimulator.
The stimulator, yeah, yeah. Real roads, bridges, rail projects, whatever it is, that would have had a significant effect. Because the way I like to look at it, and I do this to make it easy on myself to understand how the economy works, you know, there's a push-pull when it comes to economic growth. In my opinion, the government effect, whether it's fiscal policy or monetary policy or direct spending, is a push effect. It's harder to push something uphill, so you need a lot more muscle to do it. The pull effect is industry. It's private business, it's industry. If you have a push and a pull, that's how you get growth. If you have only a push, growth is going to be slower. If you have only a pull, growth is only going to be slower. I don't believe we pushed hard enough. By far, I don't believe the government did what it needed to do. I think this became a political problem, not an economic problem. I'm sure Jen would back me up on that. And, you know, and it doesn't matter what party you're from. I think when you look at this from an economic policy perspective, and I will speak for my perspective on the Fed. You know, monetary policy is one tool in the toolbox. Monetary policy does not change the economy. Fiscal policy is critical for that push as well. So I think we're all behind that.
I agree with you, Kevin. I think that when the stimulus was rolled out, and I served in Harrisburg. I was our Democratic caucus appointee to the governor's oversight commission on stimulus. And we would sit through meetings, and we would have every agency head, secretary, come through and tell us how they were spending their money, what that process was, all about accountability. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, in order to get that funding approved in Washington, everybody needed, well, we better have stimulus for this, and we better have stimulus for that, instead of saying, where are we going to get the biggest return on our investment? Where can we have the most significant direct impact on creating jobs, on stimulating this economy through stimulus? And you know, some of the way that money was spent, I think we could be critical of. But to your point, if we had been more strategic and really driven on where the return would be, and spent it focused more on direct infrastructure, there would have been a much greater benefit and impact on the economy. The same way, you know, I remember in 2010, you talk about politics and you talk about partisan politics. It was Rendell's last year as governor. We had this joint transportation hearing, House and Senate, Democrat, Republican, and it was, we're going to get to the bottom of it. And Rendell at the time was advocating a billion and a half additional dollars every year in his plan for transportation and infrastructure. And the argument coming back from the other side was, well, it really isn't a billion and a half dollar problem. It's a $3 billion problem. So if we're going to fix it, we should fix it right. Fix it 100%, not 50%, which really was, there's an election in November, and our guy's going to win. And so we want to fix it. We want to fix transportation on our terms.
Yeah.
The problem is they got a governor who wasn't in a hurry to fix it. And so here we are 4 years later, finally seeing money starting to roll out from a transportation fix that, by the way, wasn't a full fix anyway.
And to your point, look at the timing of that. I mean, that was the time, as Cameron, you indicated, that's the time you release the funds and you spend the money and make the commitment,
yes.
Not 2 years later or 3 years later after the recession.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the Lehigh Valley, I think it's a terrific place to invest, either for public or for private investment. And I'm glad to see that, you know, through that process, the Lehigh Valley is coming out with several projects now. And it's nice to see, you know, the growth, being a native of the Lehigh Valley and always involved in this business community professionally. It is nice to see some of the progress that we are making compared to other parts of the state and country. So, you know, I guess the glass is half full is the perspective I'm going from. And while it's not perfect now, 2008 was a long time ago, and I think I'm confident that the Lehigh Valley is better positioned now than it was even then. So,
well, employment in Lehigh Valley has gone back to the and surpassed the height that it had before the recession started. But since last October, we haven't seen any movement in that direction. It's just going sideways, which makes a lot of my forecasts somewhat dubious. I would think that they're counting it wrong.
I'll agree with you on that, Cameron. Something's wrong with the numbers.
Yeah, it can't be my forecast going back.
Well, sometimes perception is reality. People have to feel, at least on the consumer sentiment side, people have to feel like, you know, they're going to have a paycheck next month before they make some of these durable goods purchases. And we have seen, you know, mm-hmm. things like cars especially come back. The auto dealers are selling maybe not as much as they did at the peak, but they're just selling them for more money. I mean, it's business. So, you know, Ford Focus now has leather and navigation, where it didn't in 2008, and the price tag is obviously different as well.
And looking at 2006 or 2007 as an indicator is not necessarily correct. Mm-hmm. That those 2 years were exceptional. And frankly, we wouldn't particularly want to go back to those years. Prices were skyrocketing in a variety of things. Renting a ship back then had become such a major issue, which indicated that if that would have continued, imported goods would have price of imported goods would have skyrocketed, and exports would have become so much harder because then their price would go up and selling them become more expensive. So that 2 years was such an over expansion that happened, which we had never seen before, and hopefully we're not going to see it again anytime soon. Why don't we start on a closing statement, Jennifer, starting with you.
Thanks, Cameron. I'm an optimist by nature, and I really think, to Josh's point, we're really blessed here in the Lehigh Valley. We are doing much better than the majority of Pennsylvania. We've continued to see growth. We're blessed by our geography. We're located very strategically, as commerce goes, in our country, and particularly here in the Northeast. And I think if you look at our three major cities, Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton, all of the downtowns are on the move in a very positive way. And I think the fact that we have seen things continue to move in the right direction through the recession is only an additional positive. And, you know, you have $1 billion worth of construction happening in downtown Allentown, completely unprecedented. I bet there are a few communities in this country that could boast the same thing. And I think we are seeing one of our most challenged parts of the valley right now become one of our biggest strengths. And that's only going to continue to drive people's focus and attention in the valley. They're going to begin to see it differently because the way of Allentown in so many ways is the way of the Lehigh Valley. And as they look to that biggest city on the county seat and they see something positive happening there, I think it's going to continue to make the Lehigh Valley a very attractive place to invest, an attractive place for people to live, and the quality of life is only improving. So I'm excited. I consider myself more or less an ambassador for our community, so I'm going to be optimistic. And I think sometimes we can overcome some of the reality and challenges statistics might tell us if we just keep working through them.
Sure. Yeah, Jennifer, I'm an optimist as well. I think we have to be working in our respective fields. And I would also say that I do believe that, as Cameron, you indicated in your report, we are seeing that we're on the edge right now of some of the trend lines that would indicate growth. One thing I do want to share, though, and this is something that you don't hear a lot about from my side of the sector, is this whole issue of minimum wage. And I would just say this, because it's becoming much more of a subject. I believe minimum wage needs to go up, but I believe it has to be a federally driven program. I don't like these proposals in state levels and municipal levels on changing minimum wage. It will kill potential growth in some of those areas. The federal government should take a hold of it. We should raise the minimum wage. We should benchmark it against an objective measure, so that it can't be changed except for whether it's CPI or some other indicator that says, look, you know, we're gonna tie it to that and it's going to go up based on CPI. We do need to do that. But again, that's a push strategy. So that's my little plug for businessman who hires a lot of people is still behind a bigger minimum wage.
Okay, Josh.
Well, I sense a lot of pride and I see a lot of smiles and eye contact among my panelists in the studio. And we're all proud of the Lehigh Valley. We're the second fastest metropolitan statistical area in the state. As a banker, that tells me I'm working in the right place. I think the Lehigh Valley will continue to look differently than it did than when I was growing up, and I look forward to see what that progress brings. In my industry, Cameron asked me to talk about what that means to bankers earlier in the show in my summary, and I will say that the loan-to-deposit ratio of the banks that are here is too low. Banks would like to make more loans, and depositors have too much sitting on the sideline even today. And I think all the competitors in the Lehigh Valley do a nice job, especially the local banks, of trying to finance and aggressively finance the growth. We can only do so much with the demand that we have on the corporate side from our customers, and that makes it very highly competitive when you have, you know, a manufacturer that's expanding or, you know, a customer that wants to do a new commercial project. I would say some of the threats that we have briefly, which is not my area of expertise, is on the residential side. My concern is the number of the millennials that are going to college and graduating with a very high level of debt is very much of concern, and the change in the requirement for the down payment for their initial, you know, first home. So I'm somewhat concerned about the American dream for what it means to this generation. I hope and expect that they will look to, you know, other alternatives for career choices besides the burden that so many have of the debt. So that could mean manufacturing. That, you know, I think there's a big push for that in the Lehigh Valley and the.
Thanks, Josh. I'd like to thank my guests, Jennifer Mann, Kevin Fleming, and Josh Dodd. And this is Cameron Afshar with Economic Pulse from WDIY.